Chapter 11.
Bad news, Your Holiness, Nefdada said as he came into the God-King's bedchamber. A young Cenarian noblewoman named Magdalene Drake was tied to the bed and whimpering into her gag. But both she and the God-King were still dressed. Gareth was sitting on the bed beside her. He caressed a knife up her bare calf.
Oh, what is it?
One of your spies in the Chantry, Jessie Alguaden, is dead. She was last seen in the village of Torras Bend.
The Dark Hunter killed her?
I assume so. Our men said that Jessie was planning to study the creature, Nef said.
So she went into the wood and never came back.
Yes, Your Holiness, Nef said. He rubbed his stooped back, as if in pain. It wasn't only to remind the God-King of his age, but also of the burdens Nef bore in serving. With a savage motion, the God-King stabbed the mattress so high between Magdalene's legs that Nef thought he'd stabbed the girl. She squealed through the gag and bucked, trying to get away. Heedless, Gareth cut toward her feet, shearing her dress to the hem and sending feathers into the air. Abruptly, he was calm once more. He left the knife sticking out of the mattress, folded the cut dress back, and put his hand gently on the girl's naked thigh. She trembled uncontrollably.
It is so hard to get spies in the Chantry.
Why do they insist on throwing their lives away, Nef?
For the same reason they join us in the first place, Your Holiness. Ambition.
Gareth looked at the Verdmeister wearily.
That was a rhetorical question.
I have some good news as well, Nef said. He straightened a little, forgetting his back. We've captured a Ledeshian bard named Aristarchos. I think you'll want to interrogate him personally.
Why?
Because I viewed him, and what he's seen is remarkable.
Gareth narrowed his eyes.
Oh, out with it. He believes he has seen the bearer of a Kakari. A black Kakari.
Stop looking at me,
Stefan said. He was a fat cloth merchant, some former lover with a grudge who swore that he could tell Vi who the Shingo was. Either the Shingo was a woman, or Stefan had little preference which field he ploughed, because this had been his price. Vi lay under him. She moved with the dexterity of an athlete and the skill of a courtesan trained by Mama Kay herself. But her eyes were utterly dispassionate. She wasn't moaning, wasn't making faces. She wouldn't pretend pleasure, and it was giving Stefan problems. Like most men, he was three quarters talk and one quarter cock, a little less than a quarter at the moment. He pulled back and cursed his limpness. He was sweaty, and he stank under the smell of his fine oils. Vi couldn't help but give him a condescending smile.
I thought you were gonna give it to me good, she said.
His face flushed, and she wondered why she was sabotaging him. He was no more or less than any man, and she still needed to learn what he had to tell her. Taunting him was only going to make this take longer.
Let your hair down, he said.
Forget my hair. Nisos, couldn't they leave one damn thing alone? She rolled over and shimmied her hips, reaching out with her talent to grab him. Then, she did things to help him forget. When she was 15 and Master Gibbet had taken her to Mama Kay, the courtesan had watched the wet boy bang her, then said, Child, you fuck like you don't even feel it.
Do you?
There was no lying to Mama Kay, so Vi had admitted it. Her sex was totally numb.
Well,
Mama Kay had said. You'll never be the best, but it's nothing we can't overcome. The oldest magic is sex magic. With your tits and all the talent you've got, I can still make you into something special. So Vi used her skills now, cursing the effete asshole in a whisper. The words didn't have to match her intent, but like all talented women, she had to speak to use her powers. Stefan moaned like a dumb animal, and in moments he was finished. While he was still in a stupor, as a little fuck you, she wiped herself clean on his fine cloak and sat cross-legged on the bed in the armor of her nudity. Tell me, fat man, she said, looking at his pale rolls with such distaste that he covered himself in shame. He turned away. By all the gods, do you have to... Tell me. Stefan covered his eyes. They used to get runners. They knew to come to my house. I sometimes overheard bits and pieces, but he was always so careful. He burned the few letters he got, always went outside to talk with the runners. But the night of the invasion... the liberation... he got a runner, and he wrote a note here. Stefan grabbed a robe and pulled it around himself before walking over to his desk. He pulled out a sheet of Siurin rice paper and handed it to her. It was blank. Hold it up to the light, he said. Vi held the paper up in front of a lantern and could see faint impressions on it. Save Logan Gyre, it read in a neat, tiny script. And the girl, and the scarred woman if you can. I will reward you beyond your wildest dreams. Instead of a name, it was signed with two symbols, a heavy-lidded eye circumscribing a star, drawn without lifting pen from paper, and beside it, a nine-pointed star. The first was the glyph of the Sakage, the second, the symbol of the Shinga. The two together meant every resource the Sakage had was at the recipient's disposal. He left after that, Stefan said, and never came back. I told him I loved him, and he won't even see me. His name, fat man, tell me his name. Jarl, he said. Gods forgive me. The Shinga is Jarl. In one of her poorest safe houses, all darkness and rats and roaches, like everywhere in the Warrens, Jarl and Mama Kay were meeting with a dead man. He smiled as he pulled himself into the room. His tight leg was bound with splints, so he couldn't bend his knee, and his right arm was in a sling. Blood had seeped through the bandages around his elbow. He had a crutch, but instead of tucking it under his arm, he had to hold it in his right hand. The injury to his elbow kept him from using the crutch on the side his knee demanded, so he more hopped than limped. He had short-cropped gray hair, was muscular in a stringy, tough old man way, and though his face was drawn and gray, he smiled. Guinevere, he said. It's good to see that the years have respected you, at least. She smiled, and rather than commenting on his appearance, he looked like he'd been sleeping in gutters, his fine garments were soiled, and he stank. She said, It's good to see you've not lost your silver tongue. Brant Aegon hopped to a chair and sat. Reports of my demise and all that. Brant, this is Jarl, the new Shinga. Jarl, this is Baronet Brant Aegon, formerly Lord General of Cenaria. What can I do for you, Lord General? Jarl asked. You're too kind. I come here as little more than what you see. I look like a beggar, and I've come to beg. But I'm more than a beggar. I've fought on every border this country has. I've fought in duels. I've led squads of two men, and I've led campaigns with 5,000.
You're facing a fight. Kalador has scattered our armies, but the power of Cenaria is the Sakage, and the God King knows it. He'll destroy you unless you destroy him first. You need warriors, and I am one. Wet boys have their place, but they can't do everything. As you saw a few weeks ago, they might only make things worse. I, on the other hand, can make your men more efficient, more disciplined, and better at killing. Just give me a place and put me in charge of men. Jarl rocked back in his chair and tented his fingers. He stared at Brant Aegon for a long time. Mama Kay schooled herself to silence. She'd been Shinga for so long, it was hard to risk letting Jarl make missteps. But she'd made her decision. Let Jarl take the life and the power in the Grey Hairs. She would help until he didn't need her help anymore. "Why are you here, Lord Aegon?" Jarl asked. "Why me? Terra Grayson has an army. If you'd had your way, the Sakage would have been wiped out years ago." Mama Kay said, "We heard you were killed in an ambush." "Roth Ur-Sul spared me," Brant said bitterly, "as a reward for my stupidity. It was my idea that Logan Gyre marry Janine Gunder. I thought that if the King's line were assured, it would prevent a coup. Instead, it just got Logan and Janine killed, too."
"Kalador would never have let them live," Mama Kay said. "In fact, it's a mercy for Janine. She could have been taken for Ur-Sul's entertainment, and the stories I've heard."
"Anyway," Aegon interrupted, unwilling to hear any absolution, "I crawled away. When I got home, my wife had been taken. I don't know if she's dead or if she's one of the entertainments."
"Oh, Brant, I'm so sorry," Mama Kay said.
He continued without looking at her, his face rigid. "I decided to live and make myself useful, Shinga. The noble houses want to fight a regular war. Duchess Grayson will try to wink and flatter her way to a throne. They don't have the will to win. I do. And I think you do, too. I want to win. Failing that, I want to kill as many Kalidorans as I can. Are you proposing to serve me or be my partner?" Jarl asked. "I don't give a rat's ass," Brant said. He paused. "And I know a lot more about rat's asses now than I ever thought I would."
"And what happens if we win?" Jarl asked. "You go back to trying to eliminate us?"
"If we win, you'll probably decide I'm too dangerous and have me killed." Brant smiled thinly. "At the moment, that doesn't bother me much."
"So I see."
Jarl ran his hands over his dark microbraids, thinking. "I'll have no divided loyalty then, Brant. You'll serve me and only me. Do you have a problem with that?" "Everyone I've sworn anything to is dead," Brant said. He shrugged. "Except maybe my wife, but I have some questions. If you're the new Shinga, who's the old one? Is he still alive? How many fronts is this war going to have?"
Jarl was silent. "I'm the old Shinga," Mama Kay said. "I'm retiring, and not because Jarl is forcing me to. I've been grooming him for this for years, but now events have forced our hand. The Warrens are our center of power, Brant, and they're dying. Starvation is already a problem, but pestilence comes next. The God King doesn't care what happens here. He hasn't set up any power structure at all. If we want to survive, and by we I mean the Sakage, but I also mean Cenaria and every wretched soul in the Warrens, things have to change. We can still get wagons and boats in. The soldiers check the cargoes for weapons and they demand bribes, but we can survive that. What we can't survive is what happens once every wagon that comes in loaded with food gets plundered. People are starving.
and there are no guards to stop the theft, and if one wagon is plundered, every wagon thereafter will be. If it happens, the merchants will stop sending anything in. Then everyone will die. We aren't there yet, but we're close.
So what are you going to do?
Brandt asked. We're going to set up a quiet government. Everyone knows me, Mama Kay said. I can hire bashers to guard wagons. I can adjudicate disputes. I can direct the building of shelters.
That makes you a target, Brandt said.
I'm a target no matter what, Mama Kay said. We've lost some of the wet boys, and I don't mean they're dead. The wet boys swear a magically binding oath of obedience to the Shinga. The God King has broken that bonding. I've learned that Hugh Gibbet told the God King who I was. Gareth doesn't believe a woman could be the Shinga, so now he's searching for the real one. But he might change his mind any day, whether I act publicly or whether I stay in the shadows. I can't control that, so I might as well do what needs to be done.
Mama Kay was as calm as any veteran warrior going into battle. She could tell that Brandt Aegon was astounded.
Tell me my part, Brandt said.
Jarl said, You take your pick of my men and make them witch hunters. After that, I want you to make defenses we can use if the army comes to the Warrens in force. The Calidorans have witches, soldiers, and some of our best people on their side. The only reason I'm still alive is that they don't know who I am. But welcome aboard.
My pleasure.
Brandt Aegon bowed awkwardly because of his injuries and followed a big bodyguard out the door. When he was gone, Jarl turned to Mama Kay.
You didn't tell me you knew each other. I don't think I do know this Brandt Aegon, she said.
Answer the question. A slight smile touched her lips, amused and a little proud that Jarl was taking command.
30 years ago, Brandt fell in love with me. I was naive. I thought I loved him too. And I ruined him.
Did you love him?
Jarl asked, rather than ask what happened. The question was proof to Mama Kay that she'd chosen the right man to succeed her. Jarl could find cracks. But it was one thing to admire his ability, and another to experience it. She smiled a smile that didn't reach her eyes. It wouldn't fool Jarl for a second, but after all these years, the mask was pure reflex.
I don't know, I don't remember. What does it matter?